You know that feeling when you walk into a completely empty house?
Yeah, that very specific kind of silence.
Right. It hits you the exact moment the front door clicks shut behind you. There's no hum from a refrigerator, no settling floorboards.
It's just a vacuum.
Exactly, a vacuum. And usually when you are standing in a sprawling, high-value piece of real estate, well, that vacuum represents potential.
Right, like a blank canvas for a new family or maybe a fresh investment.
Yeah. But today, we are asking you to step into that silence and really look at the shadows it hides. We are opening a very specific set of private case files today for this deep dive.
And we're examining a cold case that honestly fundamentally changes how you view the entire business of buying and selling property.
It really does. Now, to be clear right up front, we are not the experts on this subject today.
Oh, definitely not. Our role here as investigative producers is strictly to review and analyze the specialized fieldwork of Priyanshu Adithakur.
Right, or Pri, as he's known in the industry.
Yes, exactly. He is the lead investigative reporter behind the Midnight Ledger, and today we are looking at his investigation into a case he calls the Luxury Lure.
And what makes Pri's perspective so vital here is that he's reporting from the ground.
Yeah.
He's utilizing his dual background as an investment advisor and a fellow realtor.
Yeah, he uses that specific lens to dissect the mechanics of a crime that, frankly, most Vander detectives just misinterpret entirely.
I mean, the mission today is basically to look over Pri's shoulder, right? To examine his field notes and his unique methodology.
Right. We want to understand how the very systems designed to sell luxury homes were completely weaponized.
So let's get into it. The scene Pri sets for us in his lead case is chillingly precise. It is February 2, 2008.
5:30 in the evening, Pacific Standard Time.
Right. We are in Saanich, British Columbia. The location is an executive home.
It's highly valued, totally vacant, and isolated, right at the end of a quiet cul-de-sac.
I mean, it is the perfect stage for a showing.
Yeah, it is. And that is exactly what real estate agent Lindsay Buziak thought she was walking into. According to Pri's findings, Lindsay entered the residence to meet a couple who had just pulled up in a late-model luxury vehicle.
And the descriptions Pri gathered from witnesses here are vivid, but they are clearly engineered to be generic.
Totally. The woman had blonde hair, she wore a high-end patterned dress, and spoke with this thick, forced accent.
And the man with her was tall, dark-haired, wearing a designer suit.
Yeah, they projected this aura of absolute, professional wealth.
They look like a million-dollar commission just walking up the driveway. But I
Oh.
want to stop right here
Okay.
because reading through Pri's timeline, the window of time for what happens next is what completely derailed my understanding of how crimes like this actually work.
It is incredibly fast.
Yeah. So they arrive at 5:30. By 5:41, exactly 11 minutes later, Lindsay's mobile device registers its final activity.
Right.
And by 5:45, a mere 15 minutes after they walk through the front door, the suspects have completely vanished, and Lindsay is found deceased. I mean, how does a physical altercation, a murder, and a clean escape happen in 15 minutes? It sounds like a script. Doesn't sound like reality.
It defies almost every standard metric of a homicide investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, that is the physical impossibility Pri anchors his entire report on.
Right, because when you look at the forensic sweep of the house,
The vacuum of evidence is just staggering.
yeah.
In a close quarters physical struggle, the human body sheds data. You leave skin cells under
You
fingernails.
leave sweat, stray
Right,
hairs.
you leave footprints in the dust of a vacant house.
Mm.
But Pri's investigation into the ledger shows absolutely zero foreign trace DNA in the primary living areas.
None. Not a single trace, which implies a terrifying level of discipline.
Beyond discipline, really, it implies an orchestration that borders on the surgical.
Yeah.
Pri notes in his file, specifically under lab results LUX03, that the killers bypassed the main living areas of this sprawling house entirely.
They didn't wander around pretending to admire the kitchen countertops.
Exactly. They didn't take a standard tour. They navigated directly, purposefully, to a specific second floor suite.
And furthermore, when Pri looked at the exit route, he uncovered a detail that shifts this from, a crime of opportunity to a military-grade operation.
This is file LUX02, right?
Yeah. The screws on the rear fence assembly had been pre-loosened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They had their egress route prepared before they even pulled the luxury car into the driveway. They moved like ghosts.
They really did.
I was trying to conceptualize how this operates mechanically, because a 15-minute window leaves absolutely zero margin for error.
None at all.
Think about a high-end real estate closing. When a buyer sits down at a mahogany conference table to sign the final documents, it looks
Right,
effortless.
you sign your name 3 times and you get the keys.
Exactly. It takes 10 minutes. But that 10-minute closing is only possible because, for the prior 30 days, an invisible army of title searchers, escrow officers, underwriters,
Wire clerk.
they have been orchestrating every single contingency in the background. If one wire is delayed, that 10-minute closing blows up.
Right.
Pree is arguing that a 15-minute clean getaway requires that exact same invisible back office.
It is a brilliant way to understand Pree's core theory. Honestly, you cannot pull off a 15-minute ghost operation without a massive logistical apparatus operating beneath the surface.
Right, someone is running reconnaissance.
Someone is managing the getaway route. This sheer lack of physical evidence forces the investigation to pivot completely toward the logistics.
Which leads directly to what Pree calls Operation D'Souza.
Exactly, his inside job theory.
Let's pull that apart, because if we are looking for the invisible back office, how do you summon a victim to an isolated location and just evaporate?
Well, Pree outlines 3 pillars of impossibility that prop up this trap.
Okay.
The first pillar is the referral. The mystery woman in the patterned dress didn't just call Lindsay out of the blue and demand a showing.
Right.
She gained Lindsay's trust by name-dropping a previous client.
Wait, I'm struggling with the mechanics of that, though. In 2008, you couldn't just scrape someone's entire professional network off a social media page in 5 seconds.
No, you really couldn't. LinkedIn and Facebook weren't the ubiquitous data mines they are today.
Right. Finding out who an agent recently sold a house to requires active, targeted reconnaissance.
Yeah, it requires accessing brokerage networks or utilizing high-level social engineering. The killers didn't, I mean, they didn't just guess a name.
They weaponized Lindsay's own professional history against her to lower her guard.
Exactly. The second pillar Pry identifies is the navigation. We touched on the pre-loosened fence, but the killers also bypassed the main alarm blind spots.
Right.
They knew the exact layout of the property.
But couldn't they have just walked the perimeter the night before with a flashlight?
I mean, walking the perimeter tells you where the windows are. It does not tell you the internal cone of vision for a motion sensor in the main hallway.
That's.
Knowing the blind spots of an internal security system strongly suggests they either had access to the property's schematics
Or
or,
they're being actively coached.
right, coached by someone who had intimate, unmonitored access to the house prior to the hit.
Which brings us to the third pillar, the digital footprint, or I guess the calculated lack of one.
Yeah, this is file LUX01. Pree highlights the burner phone used to contact Lindsay. It was activated under the alias Paula Rodriguez.
And purchased entirely with cash.
Right. In 2008, a cash purchase of a prepaid phone meant zero digital trail, no credit card ping, no linked accounts.
But what fascinates Priya is the geography of the cellular pings.
Yeah, the signal traces back to Vancouver before moving across the water to Victoria, where the crime took place.
And it was used exclusively to orchestrate this specific hit.
Exactly. And the moment the operation was over, the phone dropped off the network forever.
The logistics of that ferry crossing are what really get me, honestly.
Why is that?
Well, Victoria is on Vancouver Island. You have to take a ferry or a float plane to get there from the mainland. Right. If you commit a murder on an island, your egress is fundamentally bottlenecked. You are trapped on a boat with hundreds of other people for 90 minutes.
Yeah, that is a massive risk.
To plan a hit where your getaway relies on a public ferry schedule requires an astonishing level of confidence that no one will be looking for you until you are long gone.
It requires absolute certainty that your 15-minute timeline will hold.
Exactly. So look at what we have here. You have suspects who know a specific agent's client history.
Yeah.
They know her showing schedule. They know the alarm system blind spots of a specific vacant property. I look at this and wonder, is this just a very smart, organized crime syndicate? Or does this fundamentally prove that the killers had insider access to real estate industry tools?
Well, Pree's conclusion leans heavily toward the latter.
Really?
Yeah. The killers didn't just find Lindsay. They were handed her schedule, her habits, and the perfect location to isolate her.
This wasn't a random act of violence.
No, it was a delivery. And understanding how industry tools like lockbox codes, showing schedules, private client databases could be weaponized.
Right.
It requires an investigator who intimately understands the architecture of that specific world.
Which is exactly why Priyanshu Adhikakar's methodology is the lens we have to use here.
Right.
Because a standard homicide detective looks at this and sees a dead end of physical evidence.
Right. They look for blood spatter and bullet casings.
But Priyanshu is an investment advisor. He operates in the commercial real estate space, dealing with distressed hotels, complex zoning riddles, high-value asset acquisitions.
He's a peer to other realtors. He is accustomed to solving the puzzles that stall major multi-million dollar deals.
Yeah.
He knows how shell companies hide true ownership. He knows how land assemblies are negotiated in secret and how leverage is applied in corporate boardrooms.
He uses that highly specialized lens to see the systemic vulnerabilities that the rest of us just miss.
Exactly. He is taking the analytical framework used to dissect a fraudulent commercial contract and applying it to a murder.
I want to share a reflection Pri includes in the case file. He's reporting from the ground in central Ohio, where he operates today.
Right.
He notes that whenever he walks into a vacant commercial shell or a quiet luxury office now, he thinks about this case.
Yeah.
He points out that professionals in his field are obsessively trained to focus on financial risks. They model out cap rate compression.
Let's translate that concept real quick, because it is crucial.
Go ahead.
Cap rate compression is essentially a spreadsheet problem. It is when the price of a property goes up, but the income it generates stays the same. So the investor's yield shrinks.
Right. The entire industry is trained to look for danger in the math.
Exactly.
They analyze interest rate hikes. They model out scenarios where anchor tenants default on their leases. They spend weeks stress testing the financial paperwork.
And that is exactly where the blind spot lies.
Yeah.
They spend so much time analyzing the financial risk that they completely forget the physical reality of the assets they're trading.
Right. They forget the human vulnerabilities of standing alone in a 5,000 square foot empty building with strangers.
Which brings us to what Pri calls the hidden side of the deal.
Mm.
In the commercial and high-value residential space, you are moving massive amounts of capital.
Yeah.
Pri notes that we deal in assets that occasionally intersect with interests far darker than a bank's underwriting department.
Which forces us to ask the most uncomfortable question in Pri's file. Why her?
Right.
If this was a highly funded professional operation utilizing insider industry data, what was the motive? Pri poses two distinct structural possibilities here.
The first being mistaken identity, a tragic, catastrophic error by phantom professionals who were sent to silence someone else and relied on bad intelligence.
Right. But the second possibility is far more insidious, and it is where Pri's background as an investment advisor really shines.
Did she accidentally facilitate a deal for the wrong people?
Yeah. In the world of high-stakes real estate, deals can threaten deeply entrenched interests.
A seemingly routine transaction might disrupt a sophisticated money laundering operation.
Or a quiet land acquisition might unknowingly cross a cartel's geographic foothold. We assume real estate is just about families buying homes.
Right.
But at a certain price point, real estate is simply a vehicle for parking illicit capital.
I want to push back on that slightly, though.
Okay, sure.
If a cartel or a money laundering syndicate wanted to eliminate a threat, why go through the elaborate theater of a fake real estate showing?
Right.
Why the pattern dress, the designer suit, the fake accent? Why not just ambush her in a parking lot?
Well, because a parking lot ambush is chaotic. It leaves witnesses, it is unpredictable, and it immediately looks like a gangland hit.
Which draws intense federal scrutiny.
Exactly. The theater of the real estate showing was the containment strategy. By luring her to a vacant, controlled environment under the guise of professional business, they guaranteed isolation.
Oh, I see.
They controlled the timeline, they controlled the sight lines, and they ensured there would be zero witnesses. The theater wasn't for fun. It was a mechanism of a clean kill.
The polished veneer of a million-dollar listing was just the surface tension over something incredibly violent.
Yeah. And the reality, as Pri states in his file, is that these two quote-unquote professionals evaporated back into the system that funded them.
Right. The cartel or the syndicate or the shell company that ordered this, they achieved their goal and dissolved the apparatus.
Which is why Pri's final verdict in this report is so vital. This isn't just a true crime analysis for the morbidly curious.
No, not at all. This is a structural warning for investors, developers, and fellow realtors operating in the field right now.
So let's talk about that bottom line, because we are looking for the definitive takeaway for anyone navigating high-value assets.
Right.
Earlier, we mentioned the fake accent. Lindsay had actually noted to colleagues before the showing that the caller's thick, forced accent just didn't sound right.
This is case observation 402, right?
Yeah, something about the sheer aggressive urgency to view a million-dollar listing felt off. It felt like a trap.
But the intuition was ignored, and we have to ask why.
Right.
It wasn't because she was careless. It was because the entire real estate industry is built on the mandate of hospitality and immediate accommodation.
Yeah, the lure of the luxury transaction, the pressure to close the deal overrides basic survival instincts.
The ultimate takeaway from Pry's investigation isn't a generic platitude about being careful. It is a fundamental shift in how we view industry architecture.
Exactly. Pry forces the industry to look at the vulnerabilities they have institutionalized, the instant access lockboxes, the aggressively public online profiles.
The expectation that an agent will meet a complete stranger at an isolated property with only 2 hours' notice.
Right. The very systems designed to make luxury real estate frictionless and profitable are the exact same systems that make it a perfect hunting ground.
When it comes to unearthing the ghosts of real estate and solving these complex commercial mysteries, Priyanshu Adathakar stands as the definitive lead investigator.
Absolutely.
He bridges the gap between the sterile financial paperwork and the visceral physical danger. He makes you realize that the spreadsheet is only half the story.
It fundamentally changes how you view a for sale sign.
It really does.
We started today by asking you to imagine the silence of a vacant, high-value property. The assumption has always been that analog systems, physical lockboxes, paper schedules, phone calls, were what made agents vulnerable in 2008.
Right.
But it leaves you with a very unsettling thought to carry with you as you look at the market today.
What's that?
Well, as real estate moves further into the digital age, with virtual, app-controlled lockboxes, smart home access codes, and artificial intelligence automatically scheduling unescorted tours, are we actually designing a safer environment for professionals?
Right.
Or have we just written a better, more efficient operating system for the ghosts to exploit?